Welcome to the Internet Advisor Podcast. I'm your host and producer, Foster Brown. Along with my co-host, Gary Baker, and our team of experts, we've been helping people like you since 1998 with your computer problems, introducing you to valuable resources, and promoting tech enterprise throughout Michigan. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour podcast recorded every week at the studios of historic WJR Radio in Detroit. Both hours of the show are available each week on this podcast and are streamed to our affiliates across the state of Michigan. We're also proud to be part of Detroit's newest and fastest-growing podcast network, PodcastDetroit.com. And now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Hello, this is Foster Brown, the co-host of the program, and so delighted that you decided to spend some time with us here on the Internet Advisor Podcast. Coming up on today's program, we're going to find out what to do after dark around the Michigan Science Center. They're about to celebrate their fifth birthday, and we'll be talking with somebody from the Science Center, Lisa Reynolds, and then we'll also be talking with Steve Dito, the man who produced the music you're hearing playing in the background. Welcome to the Internet Advisor Podcast. I'm Foster Brown, the co-host of the program and producer, and welcoming you aboard this show. We have kind of a different crew with us today. Cal Carson's with us, of course, and Cal's regular part of the show group here. Cal, thanks for being with us.
I love it how he says a different sort of group.
Yeah.
But, well, you know, every week's a different sort of group.
You're right. Yeah, this time of year, that's right. And also, we have Tom Lawrence with us back again. Thank you, Tom, for joining us here.
Love being here.
And we love having you here because I tell you, the last time he was here, we had a great time.
Didn't we? We had some fun.
We really had a great time.
We're looking forward to having that kind of time, talking about different things. I just want to mention that Gary Baker is not here right now. He has sailed off into the sunset on his boat, the Shared Adventure, for this weekend, and will be back with us next week. Mr. Rudell, Ed, is the proud papa of Talon Rudell, his son, who is graduating today from Grand Valley State University, GVSU, which is... Out a little bit west of Grand Rapids.
We like to say in Michigan, near the West Coast.
That's right. Talon's getting a degree, has gotten a degree in filmmaking, I believe.
And I understand that he has taken an internship somewhere in California, working in the film industry as well.
That's right.
So
that's right.
I'll be watching those credits at the end of movies just to see the name go by.
It's a unique name, Talon Rudell. We may see him in bigger credits than that, you know?
Yeah, I can't imagine he'll have to change it like so many people do, you know?
Well, guys, what's been going on this week in technology that we can talk about both now and in our second hour when we're going to focus in a little closer on some of these things?
Oh, you know, some bitcoins, maybe.
Oh, if you had those in your piggy bank, you're happy.
Put new meaning to the word penny for your thoughts.
Oh man, I'm trying to see what the valuation is now because it is changing so quickly.
Well, actually, we've seen a $2,000 fluctuation from when we started the show till now.
Really?
It's gone that up and
you're
down.
You're right. You're right.
Isn't that crazy?
So what do you do? Do you jump in and buy at a certain time and then sell it and run out again?
Oh, it's really simple. As soon as it goes low, you buy it, and then you just sell it when it gets high.
What is low?
We don't know anymore.
$15,000 could be low right now.
It was an hour ago.
Well, you know, the whole trick is, can you get in and get out, regardless of whatever the dollar amount is, and make money as opposed to lose money?
Yes. Well, you could ask the Winklevoss twins, if you remember them from Facebook fame.
Yeah.
They settled their little $11 million squabble with Zuckerberg, and then they said, we're going all in on Bitcoin. And someone said, that's no big deal. Of course, that was several years ago. They are billionaires. They are now the first billionaires.
No kidding.
That
so they got the last laugh.
They did.
I love that. Yes. The Winklevoss twins. Oh, my. They don't care if the movie didn't portray them correctly. Who cares? They got so much money, they can't
She's laughing great. It all the way to the Bitcoin bank.
Oh, my. Well, last week when we had you on the air, I think it was $8,000 then, wasn't it?
Yeah. Now and then it hit like $17,000, and now it's back down to, what are we at now?
15. I'm looking. Let's see. I haven't refreshed my page.
14,693.
Oh, it has dropped.
Okay, so I'm the novice in the room. What makes Bitcoin go up in value and come down in value?
Even the experts can't answer that question. It's really interesting as you dig into Bitcoin, trying to figure out exactly what's pushing the value. It's so strange because it's not really based on anything other than a mathematical function that drives Bitcoin itself. So it's just the common value that we ascribe to it. It's, you know, it's not backed by any government or anything like that. It's just current cryptocurrency.
But Tom, who is ascribing the value to it? Like we have a Federal Reserve, I think it is, that sets, you know, the value essentially of our money. What's the bank? Is there a central Bitcoin bank?
Not at all. And that's what makes it so interesting, because this is a decentralized currency system. That's why there's nothing else like it. So we try to keep coming up with analogies to try to get people to understand. But you have to change some of the fundamentals understanding of money. And essentially, there is at least some common understanding of us of how we ascribe value to things.
Yeah.
And you can buy things with Bitcoin. We generally are, when we're looking at it, we're looking at Bitcoin price versus U.S. dollar. So it's the buying power of the U.S. dollar versus Bitcoin. But this number changes if you were buying it from the yen to Bitcoin, because maybe there's not as many investors coming from that side of the market, or the euro. So the Bitcoin price, it's like any other currency exchange. You have to look at it based on the currency exchange rates.
Now, when you get Bitcoin, do you buy it in denominations, or is it just one big old $15,000 coin?
Now it's infinitely divisible. That's which, which again, it's not like we know the smallest piece of the American currency is going to be the penny.
Right.
But picture, just keep moving the decimal place over. So I only want to give you, and of course it's going to change with value, I can just move the decimal place several pieces over to still give you a penny worth of Bitcoin. Just that zeros, there's a lot more zeros now and there.
You know, I was in Argentina in the winter of 69, 70. In any case, I was there for Christmas, and they had just changed their currency so that I was carrying a 500 peso note. I think the peso was still the currency then. 500 peso note. I thought it was 500 in the old currency. And I went to get a pack of cigarettes. I was smoking at that time. And thank heavens, the guy who was there was honest enough, because I gave him the $500 bill and then walked off. And he says, a momento, señor, just come on back here. And he said, sir, that is the new 500. It's almost like dealing with Bitcoin.
Yeah.
It keeps on changing that fast.
It's changing very, very fast. But because because it's digital and you're not actually have anything tangible you're holding, the transactions, it was really clever. The places that take Bitcoin, there's a lot of places online. You can buy a new Tesla with Bitcoin if you want. There's car companies now taking Bitcoin. But it was Overstock.com and a few other websites, Newegg, and they all
I'm going to go to the one place I know I can afford to use Bitcoin at, and that's Subway. Can buy a sandwich with Bitcoin.
Oh, that is something else. Did you know, by the way, Cal, that Coinbase is the top download on the Apple App Store right now?
Wow.
Yes.
Coinbase is apparently one of the
purses and exchanges. Because you actually that's where the money converts back to another currency, in our case, U.S. dollar. So they use similar apps on Subway's website. And that way they understand the value of a transaction. Because there was people who paid a couple of Bitcoins for pizza years ago, back when one Bitcoin wasn't worth enough. And now the calculation's kind of done on the fly. So your Bitcoin value, it fluctuates constantly, but they only charge you the transaction value of the $5 foot long.
Well, I can't imagine sitting there going like, I'm really hungry, and they go like, oh, nope, it just dropped in value. We're only going to be able to give you a bag of chips.
You only get half the sandwich this time around instead of the whole sandwich. Hey, guys, we're going to take a quick break right now, and when we come back on the other side, we're going to help people at iHope with some place to go during the holidays. Holidays coming up. You want to find a way of keeping the kids occupied during the holiday season? Well, this may be a great one for you. So stay tuned to the Internet Advisor. future. We're going to be visiting one of Detroit's great institutions and finding out more about what's going on there and how you can make some holiday plans to visit. Welcome back. This is Foster Brown and our crew in studio, and let's say we're going to try to help you set up some entertainment for your family for this the holidays that are coming up. That's right. It doesn't matter whether you're in Kalamazoo or Keego Harbor. If you get yourself back to Southeast Michigan, there is an incredible, incredible place that you should take your family here. It's one of Michigan's wonders, and I'm talking about the Michigan Science Center, which is located in the heart of Detroit's cultural center. And with us right now is Lisa Reynolds, who is the Vice President of Marketing and Audience Development for the Science Center. Lisa, thank you for joining us on the weekend.
Thank you, Foster.
It's good to have you aboard with us and to talk about the Michigan Science Center, which is a place that my family has visited. I haven't gotten to yet, so I am going to be taking notes.
We've got to get you there.
Now, I have heard a lot about this 1001 Inventions. What is that?
Yes, that's our current exhibition. It's called 1001 Inventions, Untold Stories from a Golden Age of Innovation. And this exhibit has been all over the world, but this is just the fourth U.S. location to host this exhibit.
Oh, wow.
And it really is a fantastic exhibit. It showcases the diverse spectrum of bold thinkers and new technologies that were produced in an era that typically is called the Dark Ages, but what you'll find out is that it really wasn't the Dark Ages at all. There was really a lot of innovation occurring in this multi-faith, multicultural civilization that stretched from Spain to China during the 7th to 16th century.
Am I understanding correctly that development that was going on in places that we would now consider the Arab world?
Yes, much of it was, but it really was, even including, as I said, Spain and China as well. So when you think about Muslim civilization, it really does refer to that broad section of people from many different religions, ethnic backgrounds,
yes,
and language traditions.
Yes, absolutely. So what are some of the things that are in that exhibit that might tickle people's fancy?
Well, it's interesting. It's set up with seven zones. So it covers a town zone that really talks about architecture, and you learn about how some early thinking was done around building earthquake-resistant mosques in that town. You learn about a market zone, a school zone, universe zone, which is one of our favorites because it really uncovers how early astronomers really used things like astrolabes, which I wasn't familiar with before this exhibit, to really help to discover things. And there was a precursor to things that we know today, like the GPS.
Oh, wow.
And things that we think about today, how we even know when a solar eclipse will happen. You know, you can look back at this point in time and figure out, okay, there were some early thinkers who helped guide us.
Yeah.
There's also a home zone and a hospital zone and a world zone. And it's a very interactive exhibit. So you can go in and you can touch and you can play and there are videos. And it's very informative. It's really good for all ages.
You mentioned something that's important because I think when people hear the word museum, or they kind of think of, glass cases and don't touch. Don't let the kids near it.
Not
it
at all.
It might break something. And in this case, come on, kids, get your hands in.
Absolutely. And anyone, if you come to the Michigan Science Center, you know that everything is hands-on. We really do encourage that interaction.
Go ahead.
So, Lisa, if I could ask, would you say it's good for all ages, the whole family, that sort of thing? And is there anything that you would say is more gravitating toward the younger set and what might be gravitating more toward, you know, my age?
Well, it really is good for all ages. In particular, and if you're asking about the Michigan Science Center as a whole, we've got all kinds of exhibits that will speak to your interest in STEM. So whether you've got a three-year-old that you want to take to our Kidstown area where, you know, they have everything on their size and their level.
Oh, that's nice.
If, or if you're 18, you know, 40 or 80. There's something for everyone.
Now, I understand that a lot of museums are doing this across Michigan. Matter of fact, across the country for that matter. And I know the Michigan Science Center needs to, you know, get whatever donations and stuff they can to keep it going. But some of the banks, I think like Bank America, will sponsor mm-hmm. some days during that time. Does Michigan Science Center participate in that?
We do. So Bank of America has the Museums on Us, which opens up free access to Bank of America cardholders the first weekend of the month. Yes, we participate in that. And we also offer free access days. We are looking forward to celebrating our fifth birthday on December 26th. And we are offering free general admission to everyone. And that also includes free admission to 1001 Inventions. And folks can register for that on our website at mi-sci.org. So we really look forward to people coming out.
Now, in addition to free things that they can get, are they like lifetime memberships or yearly memberships that people can purchase? Like they'd be a great Christmas gift to give to a family.
Oh, yeah.
They are wonderful gifts. So, yes, we do offer gifts, gift memberships, as well as if you want to come in and purchase an individual or family membership. This is a great time of year to really offer that gift of wonder and curiosity to a family all year long.
So what would the normal fee be coming in for, say, for a family of, let's say,
four?
Good idea. Boy and girl and mom and dad. What would the cost be for them?
Well, generally, you would pay $14 for general admission for adults and $11 for children. However, if you get a family membership for $75, then you know you have access 365 days a year. So we encourage people to become members of the Michigan Science Center.
That certainly is the best deal around to do that.
Absolutely.
Because you can keep on coming back throughout the year.
Yeah. You can keep on coming back, and you also get invitations to exclusive member events and discounts at our retail store and our special theaters. So it really is a great value.
And a lot. And one of the nice things about it is the access to the Michigan Science Center, just by car. If you're coming down either I-75 or I-94, you've got a great access to it on Warren Avenue there. As I said before, it's in the heart of the cultural center too.
Yes, it is.
Very easy to get to. Lisa Reynolds, by the way, is our guest. She's the Vice President of Marketing and Audience Development for the Michigan Science Center. And you mentioned the fifth birthday coming up. Have you been around for all 5 years? Curious.
I have not. I have only been around for about a year and a half, but I have enjoyed it tremendously. And the Michigan Science Center continues to grow. We are very excited that over these 5 years, we have been able to impact more than 1.5 million people between our museum as well as our traveling science program, which takes our activities out. It's taken them to 47 counties across the state of Michigan.
Mm.
I haven't been to the Science Center in a while. As a matter of fact, I might just do it over the holiday period. What is what you would call the premier exhibit or a thing that you have down at the Science Center, the biggest thing that draws most people in?
Well, our traveling exhibits are really that. I know we just talked about 1001 Inventions. It will only be open until January 7th, so I strongly encourage folks to come out over the holiday break, especially to come see that exhibition. They don't want to miss it. As I mentioned, it has been in the U.S. only 4 times. Detroit is the 4th city to host it, and it really does inspire innovation.
Wow, that is fantastic. And that'll be probably have said it already, but repeat it again for me, please.
Sure.
How long will that exhibit be in our state and in the museum?
It will only be at the Michigan Science Center until January 7th.
Okay.
So definitely one you don't want to miss.
No, definitely. Absolutely. So it's a good deal, you might say it's a good bargain for the family, and there's so much to see down there at the Michigan Science Center. I know Dr. Tanya Matthews, your boss, has been a guest on my friend Mike Brennan's M-Squared TechCast. As a matter of fact, she's on there every month talking about what's going on down at the Science Center. And there's always something interesting going on.
Easy free parking down there as well,
There is limited parking in our front parking lot, but there's also access to a lot next door, as well as the Rackham Garage, and of course, street parking as well.
Okay, I think, Tom, you had a question.
Yeah.
Oh, hang on a sec. We've got your microphone up. Go ahead.
Yeah. I didn't hear you mention your After Dark events, and me and the wife have gone to a few of them. You know, when we don't want to take the kids, they're for 21 and older because they'll serve some alcohol, and they have...
That's
right. The next one coming up, December 21st, is a Star Wars event. So,
ooh.
That is correct.
Yeah. So I think there's a few of our audience
bring
like
your
that.
Lifesaver.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That is definitely one of our most popular events for the 21 and up crowd. It's a chance to have fun, to meet some new people. There's good music, there are drinks, and we have a unique theme every month. So as you mentioned, this month is our Star Wars theme. Of course, we want to celebrate the opening of the new movie. And really get in on the action there. And in January, we'll have our vintage video games revival, which is one of our most popular After Dark events.
That's the first one I actually went to was a vintage video game one. That's what attracted me. That's how I learned about the events.
So, Lisa, will you be wearing your Princess Leia outfit? No, I'm just kidding.
I may try to do that.
At least put the little Cinnabons on the side of your head. It'll look wonderful.
You're coming as Chewbacca, aren't you?
We are inviting everyone to come in costume if they wish.
Oh, that is good. I didn't know that. How did you?
That's awesome.
Yeah, what costume would you pick?
Oh, I have no idea. I'm not big at the costume. I just want to be at the event.
That's the After Dark series. When do those generally start?
6 p.m. to 9 p.m., right?
Yes, that's right. Every third Thursday of the month.
Every third Thursday of the month, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Is there a flat fee for it?
There is, and you can actually purchase tickets online at mi-sci.org. Tickets are $15, and that includes a drink as well. So it is very affordable, especially for a date night or just a good time for a happy hour.
That sounds great. Again, we've been talking with Lisa Reynolds, who is the Vice President of Marketing and Audience Development for the Michigan Science Center. They're going to be celebrating their fifth birthday coming up later on this month on December 26th. And it's worth the trip if you're coming from the west side of the state or you're going to be here in the Detroit metropolitan area. Make sure you stop by. If you want to find out more about the Michigan Science Center, you can go to internetadvisor.net, our site, and we've got links there to the Science Center, or head over there yourself directly with mi-sci.org. Lisa, thank you again for being with us here on the Internet Advisor.
Thank you, Foster. I appreciate it.
All right. Coming back in just a moment, we'll be playing some of the music of the season and talking with Steve Ditos, the man who put music to the Internet Advisor.
To see the land and the people they've known.
Ah, that sounds good. That's because it's the music of Mr. Steve Ditos, a man who put music to the Internet Advisor, or the Internet Advisor to music, however you want to classify that. Mike, pardon me, Steve, welcome to the Internet Advisor again. Long time, no talk.
Well, thank you, Foster. Happy holidays to all of you there.
Yes, absolutely. It's good to have you on the other end of the line with us and playing some of your music. Now, that piece of music that we were playing there is one that's been out for a little while. Am I right about that?
Yes, you are. That Christmas card to the state of Michigan, where all of us are from here, of course, that Christmas card I wrote back in the 1990s, I did a CD that was titled Michigan Christmas Air, and it was with the American Lung Association. And that particular song was the title track and had, you just heard one of the vocalists there, Odelia Dunlap, but it's sort of a We Are the World for that project, and it's a Christmas carol that I'm very proud of, and every year people that bought that CD write me back and tell me how much they liked the whole production, and now I'm happy to say that it's available on the internet through iTunes, Amazon, and other music stores. And I guess that's part of what we're going to talk about here.
Oh, that is. Now, so Steve, for the sake of the people who are listening right now, we've got on our homepage images of Christmas Air, which I believe is that the album that's on?
Well, it's yes, it is.
Okay.
That's what's available on the internet. There were a few recordings from the original CD, and the CD was a huge success on many levels. It was, again, called Michigan Christmas Air, and it was through the American Lung Association. And 20 years ago, we raised a lot of money and a lot of awareness with that particular project, and you might remember that because I remember talking with you about it way back then.
Yes, back when is right.
Yeah, we're getting older, by the way, just in case. At least I am. I don't know about you.
Oh, yeah.
You're holding for it. But just recently, I took the songs that I am legally able to and put them out on the internet-based stores, the online stores like iTunes and Amazon. Some of the songs, there were recordings of songs like Winter Wonderland and Let It Snow. I'm very fond of those arrangements and those recordings, but I can't put those out on iTunes because of copyright issues until I get them cleared. But there were a number of songs, including the song that you just played, that I've put out there and begun to circulate to other people through those mechanisms. And I guess that's where the Internet Advisor comes in, because I guess you can advise your audience to get them.
That's what we are advising them to do. Matter of fact, we put a link up there that you sent us so they can go to iTunes to purchase. What does it cost?
Well, whatever something costs on iTunes, it's like 99 cents a track.
And, oh, yeah.
And then what? Like, it's technically not a CD, it's an EP, because there are six tracks, so I think the total is like $5.99 or something.
Right.
It's not very expensive, it's a great deal.
Well, it's nice.
And for artists, this gets to the point, for artists like myself, these distribution mechanisms have been huge, and you know, over the last recent stretch, I've been able to start putting some of the music I have there, and I'm looking forward to doing a lot of new stuff in the future. So it's a way to reach new audience, as I'm sure many people who use the internet know. You know,
yeah. Steve Didos, by the way, Steve Didos is our guest, and Steve is the person who wrote and composed the music that is our theme song here on Internet Advisor, has been our theme song for good grief, I forget how many years.
At least 20.
Yeah,
yes.
When we first started using it, I remember there was a dog sitting beside the record player saying his master's voice.
The old RCA dog howling.
The song is so old, if I can help you recall here, Father. Remember, we did a whole new version of it back in 2011.
That's right.
We were tweaking a couple things time-wise, and I just said, you know what, let's update it. And that was my last time on your show. My son, who played horn on it, we came in, and we had a nice time.
Right. That matter of fact, that was one of the big changes, was your son, Matty, was joining you more and more at that point in time and had joined you on horn in particular with that particular piece. That's fantastic.
And he's still a big part of Didos music and the things we do, and actually very soon after the first of the year we'll be releasing a CD of him featuring songs and recordings of him in addition to some other things. So we've got three albums out on iTunes now, and in fact I want to make sure to get this plug in.
Plug away.
this plug, we took the Internet Advisor theme, which was, as you know, a full 60 seconds of music.
Right.
And we actually have a 3-minute version of that where we get a little further with that and do a few more things musically and jazz-wise. And so it built into a longer theme.
That's cool.
There's one of my CDs that's available there. It's called A Planetary Trip. It actually has, that's kind of a long story, but it's based on music of the planets and everything.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of an eclectic CD, but because it's about technology and about themes that are scientific-based and other things like that, well, the Cutting Edge is the title of the Internet Advisor theme, and we were able to include that on that package. So The Internet Advisor theme is in a longer version.
Yeah, matter of fact, there's a one cut there called Computer Literate, which is part of that a planetary trip and back.
Actually, where... Computer Literate is part of another album of mine called Projections.
Oh, okay.
Soundtracks and
everything. I knew there were
like
that was the third one that's out there. Okay.
So, yeah. Steve, are you going to make any videos for YouTube or anything like that with your music?
Well, I'll tell you what, it's something I would love to do. There's a couple songs in particular that I think would lend themselves really well to music videos about subjects. And to this point, I've not done that. I've actually written some music for some films that your audience probably would not know. Low-budget films that, you know, I did the music for and things like that. So I could say, yes, my music has made it into those media types. However, there are a couple songs, and if there's any filmmakers out there that want to investigate this, I'd be all ears to talk about that project, because there are a couple songs that I think would make wonderful videos.
That's excellent.
Well, that sounds really great. I would say support your local artists, but because you're on the internet and you're all over the world, we can't say you're a local artist. You're world renowned, right?
You know,
are any of us local artists anymore?
That's true. That is true. Hey, you mentioned, you know, think of it, Gary Baker in his boat, Shared Adventure. Can you think of that?
Well, you can shoot
some
a video
theme
on
music
that
for
yeah.
that. A little calypso music. Something like that.
Yeah, we can shoot the video on that.
I'll have to get Gary some music for that purpose.
There you go.
It's not anything that I've offered right now, but I once wrote a song for a commercial project, and it's called They'll Never Find Me Here. That sounds like something that Gary might want to be... That sounds like where Gary is these days. Am I right?
It does. It absolutely does. Hey, you mentioned something before, Steve, that I want to delve in for a little bit for our audience, because I don't think people realize how difficult it has been for people to write and publish music and you know, to get it out to people's ears. It's been really hard until recently.
Well, actually, you raise a very complicated subject there, Foster. On one hand, yes, now anybody who makes music and records it, and it used to be that this was all prohibitive technology to the artist. You know, you had to spend money in studios, and more, I'm speaking to you from my studio in my basement, and I put a lot of my music together here using the computer-based tools, and there are probably people in the audience that are familiar with that. On one hand, it's easier to produce music than it ever has. It's easier to distribute music more than it ever has.
You can
upload digitally. There is no complexity with regard to the technology. However, on the other hand, you feel very much like you're a needle in the haystack.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the old thing about, you know, if you build it, they will come for websites just didn't work. You mean you could have a website up there, but if nobody knew about it, it didn't matter. As a matter of fact,
it's very hard to validate yourself.
Right.
Even though these tools exist out there, it's amazing how often people can try to find you and can't, just because the glut of information, whether it's musical information, whether it's textual information, it's so big that, you know, you really have to work hard to get people to find you.
Well, I am delighted to say that we've got some links on our homepage at internetadvisor.net that'll take people to the three projects that we've been talking about: Christmas Air, A Planetary Trip, and Projections, which is, I think, your newest one, right?
No. Christmas Air is the latest I've uploaded.
Okay.
So Christmas Air is in time for the season. And then I'll just say there will be more new music coming down the pike in 2018. There will be, beyond those first three that are out there, I'll be doing some more. And I really think that there is music there that is worth people's time. Of course, I'm biased to my own work. There is some wonderful stuff there, and I'm really looking forward to getting new listeners and the opportunity to come on your show today and talk about this. I hope there's someone that says, you know, I'll check this out, and I'd love to hear from people. And you know, that's one of the glories of this too, is that while it's a you're while you are a needle in the haystack, when people sit on you, they yelp, but it's nice to hear from new people, and it's nice to gain new audience, and that's in some ways easier than ever.
Well, I tell you what, here, folks, you can go to Dido's Music. That's DEDOESMUSIC.com, DidosMusic.com. We'll have a link on our homepage to that as well and find out more about all these musical projects. I tell you what, Steve, we're going to wrap things up right now. Let's go out on that tune that you made called The Bells. It's in tune with the season.
This is based on the Carol of the Bells.
That's right.
Titled Bells of Modern Times.
That's excellent. Steve Didos.
I thank you for your time and the opportunity to talk with you.
Good to talk with you, too.
And again, I think people will find some great Christmas music there.
All right. That's fantastic, Steve. Thanks for being with us. And say hello to Maddie for us as well.
I will do that. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Scrambled our group a little bit today, but nonetheless, it's that time of the program to speak with somebody who is regularly with us, and that is Mr. Mike Brennan, who is the editor of MI Tech News. Mikey, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks very much, Foster. Exciting snowy day here in Michigan, right?
It's been a pretty one, isn't it? You know, it's not too much. It hasn't gotten out of hand. And have you noticed that the Michigan drivers are not quite as crazy yet? Or maybe they are for you.
No.
I
know.
Well, I haven't gone out.
Tom Lawrence apparently has run into some.
Yeah, well, they ran into each other.
Uh-oh. Oh, dear.
Yeah, maybe a little late today.
The scary thing is all those people on those giant Cadillacs that have the four-wheel drive that think they're in tanks.
Yes.
But they slide in the snow just like everybody else.
That's because they get confused. They don't know that four-wheel drive doesn't mean four-wheel stop.
I will never forget one winter, and this is when we've had a lot of snow, and the snow banks are pretty high on the right side of the road, and somebody in one of those Escalades comes barreling by me and everybody else who are kind of just, we're just taking our time being sensible people. And about three blocks down, he was beached on one of those berms of snow, rocking back and forth with no traction whatsoever.
Yeah, that's called instant karma.
Oh, my. I have to say, I chuckled a little bit at that. Hey, let's get to your headlines. People have been wondering what's been going on in the world of technology and entrepreneurship. Mike, you've been looking at it, and I noticed this is kind of interesting because the headline I chose was Grand Valley State University, and an economist there, and Ed Rudell is there, as a matter of fact, right now, for the graduation of his son, Talon. And the economist from Grand Valley State University says that West Michigan's economy is going to remain strong through 2018. Sounds like good news.
Yeah, this is that supply management research where they look at, you know, what the demand is and what the supply is. And new orders right now are up something like 20 points on this particular scale. I won't try to explain the scale because I don't totally understand it myself. But the long and the short of it, you know, orders are placed. It takes 3 to 6 months to process the orders. So right now, I mean, things could change by next summer, but looking really good in West Michigan, which, as you know, I grew up over there. It has a very diversified economy, and it always seems to weather these downturns better than the rest of the state.
And many
so
of our
no downturn.
Yeah, and that's and it's wonderful here for many of our affiliates who are listening to us in Kalamazoo, Muskegon, and Grand Rapids. That's really good news for folks on the west side of the state. Oh, this is kind of an interesting one. The state of Michigan's MI store, or My Store, is opening up to the public for sale. I didn't know the state of Michigan had a store online.
Well, when you're very, very bad and they see something, the Department of Technology Management and Budget has a cache of these things. And a lot of it's electronic kinds of stuff. It says computers, phones, cameras, sporting goods, musical equipment, tools. And from 8 a.m. until noon on Saturday, December 16th in Lansing, and the address is in the story on my website.
Okay.
You can go there, and I'm sure you can get a heck of a deal, right?
You know? Oh, yes. Oh, so you have to be there for it.
Well, you might be able to bid online. because it says that there's 24 hours a day you can bid, but I mean, I prefer to eyeball something in the auction.
Oh, absolutely.
You can't really tell from a picture.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to be buying a pig in a poke. And this is a way of, so it's going to take place in Lansing. And if you want to find out more information about that, click on the article on our homepage, internetadvisor.net, and it's part of MI Tech News. Better yet, go to there, mitechnews.com. And the article that we're talking about is the one that says, State of Michigan, my store is opening up to the public for sale. Wow.
Yeah, but just for 4 hours. But at least you can go eyeball what's available online, see if there's anything that makes you want to drive to Lansing.
Right
in time for Christmas, right?
Exactly. Could pick something up for a great price at that rate. All right. Another headline here is the state of Michigan. Let's see. This headline was one I would rather not have seen. It says, get ready for more hacks in 2018. Really?
Yeah, it's like anything else. Until you figure out a way to defeat the bad guys, they're just going to keep doing it until you can figure it out. So it's a really good story I picked up from CNET that also provides a lot of tips on how you can back up your photos and music. And, you know, in case you are hit, ransomware, you know, they encrypt everything, as everyone knows.
Right.
And gosh, now bitcoins are, what, $12,000 or some crazy price like that? It's just common sense kind of stuff. I mean, I back up my stuff in the cloud, and then I have a terabyte disk sitting on my desk, so I've got it backed up all over the place. And that's essentially what they're warning you is this is not going to stop anytime soon, if ever. So you need to take precautions. And it's a really good story at CNET that I picked up that you can go there and it'll teach you how to do all the backup stuff.
You know, I know for both of the guys who are here, my tech experts in studio, both for Cal and for Tom Lawrence, I noticed that when we were looking for things to talk about, and maybe we'll do more of this in the next hour, backup was at the top of both of your lists.
It is like the most universal and needed thing that you have to do if you have a computer.
Yeah, I tell more people to back up because it's so hard to prevent these attacks. They just found another security flaw in the Microsoft security engine.
And
they just had a patch for that came out yesterday. So it's really hard to keep up with it. But if you have a backup, you don't have to worry as much because you can just restore if it gets broke.
Exactly. Unless the data that you have, you don't care about. If you don't care about it, you don't need to back it up.
Right.
Yep.
But most people care.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. If you produce it, you probably care about it. I did not know about that. And matter of fact, how ironic is that? We have just finished talking about Microsoft's security suite, or if you will, Defender, Windows Defender, I think it is, being the best around, and there was a flaw in it.
They found a major flaw in it.
Who found the flaw?
Ooh, I can't remember now.
It must have been a researcher.
Yeah, it was somewhere in England. It was a security research in England that found the flaw, and all it has to do is see the file because it scans all the files. Once it sees it, that's the trigger. You don't have to execute the file.
Wow.
And you're actually, if you had it turned off, you're safe. It's only if you have their security engine turned on.
Oh.
The irony of that.
Oh, but they put the patch out.
Yes, the patch is available.
So now then you say available, does that mean that it really is being pushed or you have to go get it?
It's automatically updated. So as long as you have the latest version of Security Essentials, it will automatically update. So don't ignore those updates, folks.
As long as you stay connected to the net and do exactly what he said.
Yep.
And you said don't ignore the updates.
Don't ignore the updates.
Mike, that is probably one of the biggest ones around now that... The updates, I mean, they're patching them, and they're out there. Don't ignore them.
and the big hacks have been because big corporations have ignored that advice.
Yes.
They did not do their patches. The bad guys figured that out. I mean, that was the Equifax was because they didn't patch. And I think somebody lost their job over that as well. They should. You know, little guys like us, I don't think they're going to go after because they can't squeeze much out of us. But the big companies, I mean, they seem to be the biggest offenders.
Well, Mike, I hope that you have a restful weekend. I know that you're coming to your Christmas break pretty soon. But we'll be seeing more of MI Tech News. And by the way, folks, you can subscribe to this very simply by going to mitechnews.com. Put your email address in there and you are on your way to receiving the most important headlines in entrepreneurship and technology here in our fair state of Michigan. Mike, thanks so much for being with us again.
All right, thanks, Foster. Have a great show.
Thank you. You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. To see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage, theinternetadvisor.net. You'll discover past podcasts, our free toolkit with software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and many other resources. You'll also find links to mitechnews.com, our co-sponsored weekly tech and entrepreneur newsletter, edited by Mike Brennan. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact button on the homepage and send us an email with the details. And don't forget to look for us on Facebook and Twitter and at Detroit's newest podcast network, PodcastDetroit.com. Now, let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor. Welcome to hour number two of the Internet Advisor. Hi, this is Foster Brown, your co-host and the producer of the program. And I'm delighted to say that we have Tom Lawrence back in studio with us, and along with Cal Carson and myself, we are going to be having an hour of chatting about some of the things that are going on in the news right now. Things like Bitcoin. We did a little bit of talking about that in the first hour. You know, we're getting closer to Christmas and other holidays that are going on at this time of year. Hanukkah, for people who celebrate that. And people are out buying things. Oh, I was in a Walmart. We weren't Christmas shopping as such. There wasn't a single basket left to get. That's how busy they were. It's insane, people. I don't know if that's a mark of the strength of the economy or
probably
not.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, I think it is in some ways that people are out there spending whatever they can. Matter of fact, it was kind of interesting. A lady who was in line in front of me, we were just chatting, and she volunteered that they had taken a loan out against their income tax return.
Ooh.
Bad.
I know. I said, really?
You know, I'm going to get on the soapbox for 1 second, uh-oh, and then I'll get the heck off.
All right, go ahead.
It's Christmas. It's the time. I know people are like, they want to give and that sort of thing. But, you know, give within your means.
Absolutely.
There's really no need in going outside of that. I mean, if you want to, that's your choice. You do that. But you give within your means. That way you give from your heart what your heart is and what you have to give. Because it's all about the giving and not necessarily the gift. But, I mean, if you want to take a loan against your tax return, that's fine. But do you know how much your tax return is going to be?
Yeah, if you have a very good idea of it, of course.
Yeah.
You know, but there are some people who pretty well got their taxes done now and are ready to get them sent in so that they can get that tax return back. Maybe they do.
Yeah, well, you know, more power to them. I
know what you're talking about.
You know, when I get to I have a list, I have money. When the money runs out, the list is going to stop.
That's right.
And I just smile, here's your card, and have a good day.
Know that I love you, and that's about it. Oh, my goodness. Tom, during the first hour, Tom Lawrence, by the way, let me reintroduce everybody here. Tom Lawrence is with us. He was with us last week. He is the head of Lawrence Technology Services downriver in Southgate.
Southgate, yep.
And Cal Carson, of course, is with us.
Downriver in Southgate.
No. He is our engineer today, as well as being one of our tech advisors. Ed is in Grand Rapids at Grand Valley State University for the graduation of his son, Talon. And Gary is somewhere on the bounding main.
some reason or another, all I can see is him smiling, sitting on the deck of his shared adventure.
Yeah.
And there's a half a pineapple cut open, and he's just sipping it really slow.
Oh, that may very well be.
There's a bit of jealousy there.
Okay, some of the things we started talking about in the first hour that I want to see if we can grab onto a little bit more. Tom, we were talking about Bitcoin in the first hour.
Yes.
And the value of Bitcoin, which as I think we looked at it right now, it's around $14,000, a little over $14,000.
Yeah, a little over 14. That is just amazing.
But tell them where it's gone today, because it's fascinating.
Oh, yes.
And today, by the way, we're recording this on Saturday, December the 9th.
So we've actually seen about a $3,000 swing, and that's like from the beginning of the first segment to the next segment.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, hold on to your digital wallets.
If the stock market did that, if it fluctuated like that, there would be panic.
Yes.
And so people would be like, you know, I don't know, taking their money and burying it in the ground because they're afraid of what's happening.
But it's because the world is based on that. And so, therefore, you can't have that type of turbulence and be able to keep a stable world. Bitcoin is just this little microcosm of the world. And so, therefore, it can ride like a roller coaster until it goes blue and no one really cares so much. Because the average person, if you walk out in the street and say Bitcoin, they go, huh?
I don't know. Well, that's it. Most people are scratching their head about it. But if I'm not wrong, from some of the things I've read, there are a whole lot of people who are saying to themselves, maybe we should jump on board this, including some countries.
Yes, and that's what we're seeing is large amounts of investors jumping in, jumping out, and there's really some unusual behavior. It doesn't always follow the normal Wall Street because it's not tied to a company. Bitcoin's not a company or a business we're buying shares of, so it's it's being traded like that. It's probably more being traded like a security than a actual stock. That's what's driving these, and because it's a global investment market, so you have mass amounts of investment from China. China's actually mining a lot of it, the actual what they refer to as the Bitcoin miners, because electricity is the big cost, and the Chinese government there's a lot of the large Bitcoin mining farms, as they refer them, are next to the Three Gorges Dam, the large power project.
That's exactly it. I saw that the other day. And when you hear the word mining, of course, I think for most of us, digging a hole in the ground and trying to get to something. This is a different process.
Right. Bitcoin mining is the art of solving problems. And it's actually, Bitcoin is a mathematical problem to be solved. So these machines are crunching numbers, and they're GPU based is what they refer to them, because they're basically number crunching devices. And I mean, these are server data centers that are like you would see for big companies, focus on a single purpose, and it's to solve the Bitcoin math problem. And that's how you generate Bitcoins. That's actually what makes the system go, if you will.
How many coins will the Chinese be producing, let's say, with all of electricity and all the resources that they're focusing there?
You know, it's because the problem, for every coin produced, the challenge gets harder to solve the next one.
Yes.
So there are coins being produced, lots of them in the beginning. But like anything, it's picture a math problem where there's more zeros after it. So the problem becomes harder and harder to solve. They refer to it as hashing the problem, because what you have to do to solve the math problem in a Bitcoin without getting too deeply technical is you almost like have to guess at the answer. And that's what these things do, is so many hashes per second. Well, let's just call them guesses per second, so to speak. They're trying to solve the problem. You're throwing numbers at it. And when you line those numbers up, you win the coin. And in between, there's another purpose being done. So when I want to do a transaction, because there's no one owning Bitcoin, normally you think of like Visa, MasterCard being in the middle of a transaction. Right. So me and you can exchange money when we're not physically near each other.
There's a middleman somewhere.
Bitcoin eliminates the middleman, and all that power, this processing power, is actually also processing the transactions that are going across. So when I want to exchange money with you, those transactions are being hashed by all these different miners. Now each person who gets the hash gets a little piece of that, and it works out really well. They get to create more coin.
So all the electricity is like the heat they use for smelting coins in the traditional sense.
Oh, and it's an insane amount of watts. I've been trying to calculate exactly how many gigawatts that is. It's been really scary, because they said it's as much as a small country once you add it up on a global scale.
To make one coin?
Well, there's people arguing on both sides of it. So technically, and this comes down to semantics, only one person gets to finish the transaction, so the wattage of that person isn't very significant. But so many people going after transactions make the global amount of wattage used that of a small country just to try and mine these coins.
Jeez. Wow. How do you bank it once you've got it?
Well, that's what's interesting. You hold on to a digital wallet, and the digital wallet is basically your signed it uses public key cryptography. So you basically have a password, really strong password, that allows you to hold on to the Bitcoin. And that lets you hold on to it. Now, that's where the problem can come in, because if you forget the password, oops. There's no password recovery methodology.
As it stands now.
Yeah. There won't ever be. And that's part of the way it works. That's what makes it a little bit harder for consumers to get their hands in. Picture if you lose the $100 bill, you can't get the $100 bill back. You've dropped it on the street. And that's what happens if you lose your Bitcoin. It's just gone.
Wow. All right, guys, we talked Bitcoin out, and it's still fluctuating. Let's see. Well, it's $14,706.
It went up and down just while we talked in a few minutes.
We're going to take a quick pause, and when we come back on the other side, I have a question for you guys that'll maybe take you back a few years. And I won't put the question out right now, but just hang on around. We've got an interesting question about your phone history. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, Cal Carson, and Tom Lawrence in studios. Okay, guys, so we're going to go back and take a little trip down memory lane. What was the first phone, mobile phone that you ever had?
The Kyocera, the old candy bar one. I can't remember the model number of them, but they about the size of a Snickers bar, so they used to call them the candy bar phones.
When was that? Well, about late 90s?
Oh, yeah, 90s, yeah.
Okay, that was late 90s. Cal?
A Motorola flip phone with the auxiliary battery on the back that made it about 2.5 inches thick.
Well, I can go back to 1973 when, now, this was a mobile phone, technically, okay, but it was a bag phone that I carried. I was working for a construction company at the time.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my
so
God.
I had to be out in the field, but they did things like they had to drill a hole in my trunk in order to put in the whip antenna. And then when I would get on it, you know, first of all, you were signing in. There was an operator, like in the old days when they used to have, you know, the headsets and they were plugging things in.
Oh, yeah.
And they may have been doing that, for all I know. But I would call in, and this was 3480 calling the base. And they would then connect me with, you know, whoever it was that I wanted. But that was 1973.
You know, I'm going to have to correct myself. I just thought about it because that flip phone was not my first phone because I did have a bag phone, not quite as big as yours, but it was a Samsung phone. It was 5 watts, and it came in a bag that you carried around about the size of, I don't know, a small women's clutch. It was about this.
Yes.
As I'm holding it up to the mic.
Was it tethered with a cord or was it loose?
It was loose.
Yeah.
And it had a little, you would set it down on the
exactly.
table.
Exactly. You
had
stand
a base.
It up, right? Exactly.
You pick up the headset, you dial off the headset, and it had a little flip-up antenna that was about 6 inches tall.
Yep.
And it
yep.
weighed, oh, I don't know, 10 pounds?
But
that
man.
Was in the world of NiCad batteries, where if you didn't charge those suckers right after a while, they'd remember, gee, he only charged me halfway last time, so instead of being an hour battery, now I'm 30 minutes.
And then if you forget, memory effect of those.
Yeah,
they're awful.
And if you forgot again and go, oh, he only charged me 15 minutes, I guess I'm a 15-minute battery. And then 2 weeks later, you're back at the Samsung store, oh, can I have another battery for this thing?
So, well, yeah. along the way to the phones that you have right now, we'll get to that to find out whether they're Android or Apple phones. But along the way, did you have any favorites, Tom?
You know, I loved the Palm series of phones.
Yes.
I was so
the
happy
trios?
With those. Yes.
Oh, I love them.
I loved that phone. That was a great phone. You know, they were really reliable. I can't hardly ever remember having to reboot them or anything.
You're right.
And they had a lot of functionality on them.
Oh,
and
huge.
My sister still has hers.
Really?
Yes. She still has the old Trio. It still works because it works on the same Verizon. And what we've done is my sister doesn't like technology that much. She's an artist, and she likes the things she has. So we've bought 3 of them off eBay for her. So she's got them laying around. And as they die, she just grabs another one and activates it. She's still got one left before we got to buy another one off eBay.
Now, Palm sold out to a company called Handspring.
Yes.
That's right. Yes. Yes, for a while.
And I had a Handspring handheld that I used, and I found out from my carrier that Sprint had a module that you plugged into the back of the Handspring, and it became a cell phone. And I still have that sitting in my basement right now. So I had a Handspring that was kind of fun. So I had the all the advantages of a Palm Pilot and a cell phone joined together.
Would you go backwards to some of the facets of that technology?
Nah, I'm good. I really like where the technology is headed. Yeah. I'm all in on the future stuff.
Yeah.
I'm at the point where I think we've gotten big enough for a phone. Because I remember it used to be the phones were really huge, and they got small, 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 small. Now they get big.
Yeah,
big,
that's
big.
True.
You
that is true, yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
You know? But I like the functionalities of the phones of today. but I don't necessarily need anything bigger than what I'm carrying already.
Where do you think we're heading with the phones?
They're going to be more the all-purpose device. We're seeing Samsung with their new project they have, allowing you to connect it to directly to a screen. They have a dock they sell, and you actually dock your phone connected to a screen, mouse, keyboard.
You know, I really think that we just use the terminology incorrect. We carry handheld computers.
We do.
That that's just true. Happen to have a phone feature in it.
Yes, the new ones have 3 or 4 gigs of RAM in them. I mean, that's rivaling what my laptop has in it in a small handheld device.
And when you sit down and think about it, you really, how often do you really see people using the phone as a phone?
Well, I hardly ever use it for that.
You see them, them use it, but you know, on occasion, stuff like that. But they do, you know, most of the, in the course of a day, if you looked at all the function you did with this device, you probably didn't talk on it.
Now you have a Bluetooth phone in your ear.
I have a Bluetooth receiver in my ear. That is correct.
Yeah. So you really don't need the device to be your phone, do you? The iPhone you carry.
Well, you have to have the phone in order to the Bluetooth.
I agree. But you really don't have to have. You don't have to have that
you
in.
Mean,
here.
I don't have to talk. Have to
exactly.
have it in my hand and talk to.
Right.
Them. No. With the combination of Siri, the phone numbers that are already in my address book, and the Bluetooth, I just punch it. Siri dial Foster, and Siri dials Foster for me, and I talk to him. And when I'm done, I punch the Bluetooth one more time, and I hang up.
Hmm. See, I have a feeling that we are. One of the things I've seen around is a proliferation of these wireless earbuds.
Yes.
And they're getting better and better. You know, the Apple one still looks kind of silly. Pardon me.
Yeah.
Sticking out of it. You know, it's like. What? Have you got a disease? Is something dripping out of your ear?
Little
it looks
comment,
awful.
He is not wearing an Apple one, by the way.
Not yet.
No.
At our Mac group meeting next month,
maybe.
We're giving that away as grand prize.
Oh, I gotta come.
So I think if you won them, you wouldn't mat. You wouldn't mind looking
I wouldn't
silly.
No. Not at all.
Yeah, they're a little pricey for my blood, but I mean, if I won a pair, I'd stick one in my ear.
About $300 seems to be the average point for the calling them wearables now. Do you have any favorite ones?
You know, I have the Plantronics, and I've been a huge fan of the Plantronics. When I worked in corporate IT, we all had the Plantronics headsets for our dispatcher and things like that. And I bought early on some of their early Bluetooth stuff, and it's outstanding. So I've got one of their small in-ear units, and I love it. It works.
Oh,
great.
It works. Just in-ear?
Yeah. They make some top quality. It has 3 microphones on it, 2 of them to cancel ambient noise around. So when I talk, even if I'm in the wind, you can hear me speaking.
No kidding.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. Plantronics makes great stuff. Jabra makes some pretty good stuff.
Yes.
And then there's one other brand that doesn't come to me right now, but they make good stuff too.
The LG makes some good ones. I actually have the LG Tones for the Bluetooth headsets, and theirs are pretty good, nice stuff too.
Yeah. I'm trying to look up the one wearable I saw. They're really beautiful. They're beautiful. They're like a black, and they fit in your ear. Oh shoot.
But
they're absolutely tiny.
Yeah, but you got to watch out when you're carrying when you're using those suckers, especially if you have them in both ears, because you have to be aware of your surroundings. And if you get trapped into listening to that, and there's a fire engine coming by or something like that, it's important to be.
But
able
don't
to
they
hear.
Have it? Don't they have wearables? You know that let you be aware of that as well.
Well, if you know kids that crank them up and they're listening to their music, they have no idea what's going on with the world.
That happens. Yes, absolutely.
I've reached up and just pulled them out of my daughter's ears a couple times.
Oh, that's cruel, Dad.
It's attention getting.
Hey, let's take a break. And when we come back, let's talk about some more of the devices that are out there that people may be looking at for Christmas and some things that have struck you that, you know, you're looking at maybe getting hold of yourself, like these little earbuds that I'm looking at myself and haven't got the money for it. No, I'm not going to take a loan out. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor, and we've got a great roundtable going here with Cal Carson, Foster Brown, and Tom Lawrence. And guys, I thought we'd swing our focus. We talk about wearables and phones. You have the Plantronic wearables, right? The ear ones. Where do you think that's heading? I mean, I'll tell you why I asked that question. It seems that if you buy into one kind of technology, very shortly, another one takes over that.
The voice interactiveness is where we're really moving.
Okay. Okay.
Yes, that's the and
that's the key
service integration. Now, picture this, and Google demoed this at their latest when they released a new Pixel phone, and they released some of the integrations they're doing. One of them was saying, "All right, I want a sandwich from this store," and it says, "Here's the menu. Which kind would you like?" So you can actually start an interactive order by asking your assistant, "Say, hey, find the nearest restaurant," and then some of these restaurants have integrations with Google that allow them to. You can place your order. I want a Subway $5 footlong. All right, which and have it ready at the nearest Subway. And now you've never talked to a person. You didn't go to a website. You talked to your phone and told it what you wanted, and then it lets you know, and your sandwich should be ready in 15 minutes.
Wow.
Pizza places are looking at this too, where you can simply go on there, order a pizza, and not actually have to interact with someone. So it just comes up on a screen to them, and they send you the pizza.
So if you're investing in future technology, it sounds like you would say, keep your eye out for these, like the Amazon.
Yes.
What's it called?
Well, you have the Amazon Echo, and you have the then you have the Google Home, which is their version. They're competing.
A lot of ads for that on TV now.
A lot of it on there.
They are really going after that market.
Yes.
You know, I'm thinking more. The next step is going to be more implants. A lot of people, you know, they shake their heads about it. But you know something, I would welcome the ability to have. Where I wouldn't have to put my Bluetooth in every day when I get ready to go to work and stuff like that. Just have it permanently installed in the head so that you could always use it that way.
Hmm. Yes. There's a few people, actually. Gabe Newell, who is of Valve Software, one of the largest software companies out there, he's actually done a lot of exploring on what they refer to as wetware, which is the integration of technology into people. And he's an interesting guy because he's not your average human there. He's someone who's he's actually quite accomplished in the market, and so he's looking at some of those ideas. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people looking at it.
It may seem a little Borgish, but I think it's going to be a good idea to do.
We thought the Borg was going to, you know, come and take us. We're just going to turn ourselves into it.
Oh, sure. Save them a trip.
We'll save them a trip. We already got the implants.
Yeah.
Connect us to your network.
I mean, you think about it, it's going to make sense eventually anyway, because, for example, they have that, you can get that new bio tool that they have that can check your heart rate.
And, oh, yes.
And do your electrocardiograms with and it talks to your phone and sends it back to your doctor. Well, I think it's going to get to a point where you're just going to be able to have all that stuff in you, and you just Bluetooth your phone, boom, it sends it to them, you're good to go.
Yes, there's a lot of that going on. There's a group of hackers that have really been working on the diabetes project, and it's about creating artificial pancreases and constant feedback. One of my friends is actually involved in that because he's insulin-dependent diabetic who's also a hacker. So he's very interested in working on this, and he's been active in some of these projects. So we're going to see more of that constant telemetry, and it's neat because it can tell him things in real time. Some of the test devices they have, not FDA-approved, but they're going through processes. And it's really interesting. That's going to be another thing. If we can have a system that monitors us all the time and lets the doctor know, hey, you've had a little bit too much salt.
Yeah.
Wasn't Google doing something with contact lenses that could take your blood sugar? Was it?
That was the concept of it, is being able to measure blood sugar by contact lenses and also the other future stuff is projecting things onto them so you can have an overlay, because augmented reality is where that's really going. Because you have VR and AR. So VR is really cool, but it's immersive.
Virtual reality.
And I don't know what's going on around me. I've locked myself in this thing, something over my eyes, and it's kind of scary because you could walk up behind me. Augmented reality, I have a million and one uses myself for it. We've seen a lot of cool demos. I've got to demo that at Microsoft. You put on the glasses, I still see you, but now I have overlays of information. And I'm hard with people's names. And I could just picture such a good use of it. Like, tells me all your latest things, times, you know, I can just, like, an overlay. And you think I know everything about you.
Exactly. Owes me $50, you know, kind of thing.
wouldn't have to do it the old way, because I remember one time I was involved with a sales organization, and the chairman of that organization, I was at a convention, and he walked by me, and I walked by him. He says, "How you doing?" I said, "I'm doing fine." He says, "Well, I'll see you later, Cal." And I go like, and I looked, and I mean, this guy must meet like 10,000 people a day. I go like, how does he know my name? So I said, "Hey, wait, Rich, I got to ask you a question. I got to know, how did you know my name? He goes, oh, it's a system I've been working on for years and years and years, and I've got it perfected now. I go, really? Tell me about it. Can I learn it? Because he goes, it's real easy to learn. He goes, when I walk by you, I just looked at the name tag on your shirt. He said, until I did that, I had no idea who you were.
And when you said, hey, Rich, were you reading his name tag?
No, I knew who
he was. You knew who he was, yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, he stood out, of course, but, you know, but it's like, I'm just one in the multitude of millions.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun.
So if you're going to be investing your money in your own personal technology, then you would invest it in what?
Ooh, that's always a tough one. Looking at some of these people coming up with some of the new ideas and how they can use augmented technology. Actually, I was just at a startup pitch last week in Detroit, and someone has one for golf, some augmented technology to help understand your golf game better. So there's plenty of things it just hasn't been applied to yet. So
yeah, I mean, like even Apple has already started theirs with IKEA. And so, like, if you,
yes.
Yeah, so on your phone, you can go to the IKEA catalog and take a picture of a chair. Mm-hmm. And, gee, what does that look like in my room? And you bring up your camera on your phone and you hit another button, and now the chair's sitting in your room, and you can move that chair around.
No.
So you can fill your entire room
with virtual furniture.
IKEA's virtual furniture and say, yep, that's what it looks like.
No.
And then just start ordering it off the phone.
Yes. I had no idea.
Oh, yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
and that's where Qualcomm comes in. So Qualcomm just announced their latest line of their Snapdragon processors, which is Qualcomm runs the majority of the processors in the flagship phones, and they have a big enhancement of new stuff for that augmented reality because they realize the phone's going to be the easiest access. We aren't all going to run around wearing goggles because it kind of looks ridiculous and expensive,
Right.
And we haven't figured out a practical way to make them, but we're all holding a phone.
Yep.
So add the feature in a phone. There's a camera on one side, a big screen, and I drag the chair where I want it, and I can furnish my room, and I can see it in... You know, it's going to change the purchasing experience.
I'm staying on the subject for just a little bit, folks. I was watching a TED Talk that had just come out. A young woman who was a surgeon was giving a talk, and she had some demonstrations behind her on a screen of augmented reality and surgery.
Yes.
Where the person who is helping the surgeon is at a distance. But now not just kind of talking to him and showing, he can actually get his hands in there and show, like, for instance, he was showing where to cut on a tumor or where to cut on a knee. And matter of fact, they actually did do the cut and then showed the inside of the knee and things like that with augmented reality. It's absolutely mind-boggling.
Yes.
And if you've ever seen the Good Doctor series, the last, either the last or the second last of the series episodes, they had a scene in which two of the surgeons are holding a heart. But they both have got the mask, the headgear on. And then they're manipulating this heart and trying to go through certain scenarios to see which one will work. That kind of thing, I don't think, is TV pretend. This isn't Star Trek we're watching.
Ford is right now using it as a design tool for their cars. They have the engineers will do that. So instead of having to build these massive prototype cars, they can move the mirrors around. It's so enhanced when they can climb into a car and say, what does a rearview mirror look like? It's here. What if we change the angles of things? So it's not just the car they're changing. It's the position of things in real time. So they can just have a shell of a car and enhance everything around it. So now you've cut production time or cut engineering time to get to production because you've thought out all these things without having a prototype.
All right. Yep. I want to get back to where would you spend your money if you're thinking ahead? And let's think in terms of computers. Would you go for laptop? What would you go for at this time? A tablet? One of these ones that they call hybrids? Where would you invest your money?
Ooh.
It all depends. See, it goes back to the magical question. What are you going to do with that computer?
Okay.
You know, because I have both a laptop and a desktop.
Mm-hmm.
And I have different uses for each one of them. Matter of fact, I'm setting up my new desktop now, which is an iMac. It's a 27-inch screen on it. It's beautiful, and I love it. But I do different things on my desktop than what I do on my laptop. And because of that, then my directions are different on what I would look for in a laptop and what I look for in a desktop.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, and because I don't really game, so my laptop is not very powerful. Matter of fact, what I wanted was it's got the full high 1080 screen, but in a 13-inch package. It's lightweight, and I get about 8 to 10 hours of battery life. That's actually what matters.
Okay.
I take it places like it's sitting here for doing my show notes. But my desktop is a monster with three huge monitors and a wraparound. It's a really enhanced setup because I do all my editing and creative work for my video work and YouTube and everything else. So that is a liquid-cooled monster of a computer. It's part of my office. It's not in my office. It is part of my office.
It's interesting you mention that because I am running into a certain problem. I have a MacBook Pro, and I have 16 gigabytes of RAM on here. It's one of the newer ones. It's, I think, a year old. It's 2016. The problem I am having is that when I do video audio editing on it, it is really slow taking my edits. And reproducing. I expected it to go zip, zip, and be done. I don't know what the problem is. I don't know.
Of course, it all can matter on a bunch of things. Number one, do you have the latest version of that software?
Yes.
Number two, maybe you need more RAM in there.
Than 16?
Well, yeah, it depends what you're doing with it. I mean, are you only doing editing, or are you doing other things while you're doing editing?
Well, a significant amount of the work I do on this is editing. It's work.
Yeah, yep. Or then maybe the bottom line might be, I don't know, maybe the processors that are in the laptops don't have enough spunk as opposed to the processor in a desktop.
Okay, like this, I believe, is an i3.
There you go. You just
didn't say
i7.
Okay, now that is part, I think, of what when people go to buy computers, they find really confusing. I'm sorry, I have an i5. Core 2.9 gigahertz i5, but still, that's not
right.
Perhaps gutsy enough to do that kind of editing.
Go full i7.
And okay, when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about that whole business of the CPU and how important that is and what size, etc., you ought to
have
as we go on. And we'll wrap things up, I think. We're coming up to wrapping things up here on the Internet Advisor. Well, this has been a fun ride. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have. Our roundtable here. We got a taste of it last week, and I decided we'd try it again this week. And Cal Carson, thank you very much for being here and for doing all your great work with the board there.
Where else can I have so much fun for so little money?
So very little money. And thank you very much, Tom Lawrence, for being here. Well, let's tell folks again where your shop is.
So I'm Tom Lawrence, owner of Lawrence Systems or Lawrence Technology Services. You can Google it both ways and find me. We're over in Southgate, Michigan.
And the URL for your site is?
We're online at lawrencesystems.com.
lawrencesystems.com.
So well, if you need any sort of IT situations, both big and small.
Big and small. We have, and if you just want the scale of our projects, click around on there. You'll go to our blog and you can see all kinds of fun stuff we do.
Yep. Yeah, and you're doing some video projects now. A lot of video projects now.
Yeah. Yep. That's a lot of fun.
Now, is that the video for your clients or your own video?
It's mostly our own video. We don't do we're getting into doing a little bit more for some of our clients. We're actually going to be launching a new company in January that's going to be focused on more of that called LTS Creative. So we're going to split it off because it seems weird to have an IT company that gets in production, but that we spend so much time producing. They see a lot of the stuff we produce and go, can you do that for me? And I'm like, well, we never thought of it as a business model exactly. So we've turned it into one. So that's something we're expanding into.
Great. I'm delighted to hear that. It sounds like things are up and running and on the way, and you also have a podcast. Open Modest. Tell us about that.
Oh, yeah. We've got the podcast, the Sunday Morning Linux Review. So if you like deep technical dives into Linux and geeking out with me and a few co-hosts, it's a lot of fun.
What time Sunday morning is that up?
7 a.m.
Ooh-wee.
Just before you hit that pew? Find out what you have to do.
And you're also part of the Podcast Detroit. .com network.
Yeah, we hang out with Bob and Dave and the IT and ED guys. They're great.
And you can find, by the way, any information about Tom there at the Podcast Detroit site. Great site. And that's where we are as well.
Fun, we should probably put a link on our website, internetadvisor.net, to the Lawrence website as well.
We certainly will.
I appreciate that.
That is going to be part of my job once I finish the program here. The beat goes on. This program never ends for me. It keeps on going all week long.
Well, it'll keep you out of trouble.
Oh, definitely. Hey, okay, before we got to the break, I was talking about my computer and not quite getting all the performance out of it I wanted, and I told you what I was doing, a lot of audio editing, and I have a
i5.
Is the processor I have. Let's talk a little bit about processors. Hang on, folks. Don't go away yet, because I want to see if we can demystify this a little bit about what these processors are and how important it is to buy a processor, that certain kind of processor with a computer I'm getting, depending on what I'm doing. We start with that premise.
Yes.
What is it you're doing if you're just, surfing the internet and watching a few videos on there. It's, in other words, rather modest use of it. You're not going to need a lot of heavy equipment for lifting.
Right.
Those would be your i3 people.
Yep.
If we're talking Intel processors. And that gets into another game because you have Intel and AMD.
Yes.
But we'll do Intel right now. If you need more information about AMD, we can figure out a way to cross-reference.
Yeah.
But if you're just a casual user, you just use the machine every now and then, you're doing mostly email, surfing the web, maybe writing some word processing, stuff like that, an i3 processor is going to be just fine for you.
Right.
But before I go any further, I just have to say this because I'm doing it ahead of myself, and that is this. When you buy a computer, you should always buy the most amount of memory, the most amount of hard drive space, the largest screen, and the fastest processor that you can afford.
Okay.
So if you can afford an i5, then do an i5. If you can afford an i3 only, do an i3 only. But you should do the one you can most afford. i3 is your entry level. That's where you want to do those casual things we just talked about.
Right.
i5, I call that mid-level. And i7, I would say is high level.
Yes.
Would you like to expand on that?
You go i9.
Uh-oh.
What? I didn't know there was.
Yes, Intel decided that there's the power user, and then there's the super power user, so now they have the i9s. It's to compete with the other company, AMD, who also came up with one. I like the name of it. They call it the Threadripper. Sounds cool. And what we're seeing is there's the power users, people who are in the creative space. If you're making a lot of things, if you're editing audio, or you're playing the games, or editing video, you really just it can never be fast enough.
I've got to stop you. We need to talk about the AMD Intel thing, because that can be a price difference. I don't know if it still is, but at one point in time, the AMD cost less.
It is still a price difference, and it's still that the AMD costs less. And if you look on any website and you start looking at a bunch of computers, start comparing them side by side, if you see an AMD and an Intel, and they're running at the same gigahertz pretty much, the AMD is always going to be cheaper. Mm-hmm. I have not seen it to be the other
way
around.
Why is that?
AMD's, that's kind of been their market, is to be able to be a little bit less expensive than them and try to work on some more innovative designs. Actually, that's one of the reasons why, if anyone ever wondered, we have x86, which we also refer to Intel.
Yes.
And then the other one is the AMD 64 standard, but Intel supports it because AMD was the more innovative company when it came to the 64-bit versions.
Oh.
So we call it, even though it's confusing if people are looking at software, because actually if they put the right nomenclature on it, it's called AMD X64, and that's because they were the inventors of some of that, though. They won out that kind of battle, but Intel had to make compatible processors because things are 64-bit now.
The other thing about when you're buying a computer, if you buy the most that you can afford at that particular time, it gives you better performance.
Yes.
And if you decide that something, maybe I want to go get that i9 that he talked about, it gives you greater resale on that particular computer. Not a huge amount, but it does give you greater resale, so that if you want to sell that off as a used computer, someone's more likely to pick up a i5 or an i7 than they would an i3, because an i3 in a used computer, heck, for the amount of money you add, another $100, you can buy a brand new i3 or even maybe even an i5.
Let me wrap this up on you, the magic word, used.
Mm-hmm.
Is it wise to buy a used computer, or should you only buy a refurbished?
Well, fine line there. You got to look and see if they put any new parts. So did the high wear part, i.e. the hard drive, was it replaced? A lot of the refurbishers, when we refurbish laptops, we put new hard drives in them because that's the most likely thing to break. So as long as they're good. Also, make sure you're buying certain things from certain places, as in high quality used ones. When the way I identify that is you look for commercial brands, like the Lenovo sitting in front of me. Off-lease commercial equipment is great. The used $199 special that was on sale at the big box store a year later, it's barely worth the $199 when it was bought. A year later, the hinges are wobbly. It's not the same.
Right. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, the business line equipment like Dell Latitudes and HP Elites, those are good brands to watch for.
The other thing, too, is that if you happen to cross over on the Apple side of the fence, if that person has Apple Care on that computer, which is for 3 years, it is transferable. And if you bought that computer used, that computer's fully covered for the duration of that warranty that's on there. Okay. So I would pay price for an Apple an Apple computer that's covered with Apple Care with no problem at all, because if it goes bad, I walk into an Apple store and they fix it.
Quick last question. Would you buy off of Craigslist?
Ooh. I have. And
yeah.
I have, and I wouldn't have a problem with doing that.
Yeah. Make sure you pick a safe careful. Meeting place. Yeah. Don't. If someone says, bring $5,000 and meet me at this dark corner.
The best way to do it, if you can check with most of your municipalities, they'll tell you, meet at the police station.
Yep. Right.
Yep. Not
right.
a problem. If they bug off, you pretty much clear.
Yeah, criminals definitely do not want to meet you there.
Well, guys, this has been a hoot. Thank you so much for being with me here on the Internet Advisor and making us another great weekend. And, folks, I hope you're enjoying it as well. Don't forget, if you check in with us on Sunday nights, that's when I post the edited version of this podcast. And we are available as well on the Podcast Detroit Network, where you'll find Tom Lawrence and his Linux program as well. Lots of good stuff there. Have a great weekend, folks, and we'll see you back with the Internet Advisor.
You've been listening to the Internet Advisor Show, Detroit's longest-running, locally-produced computer show, with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and our team of experts. For more information about our weekly show, to ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit InternetAdvisor.net and look for us on Facebook and Twitter. Don't forget to check the other great podcasts available on this PodcastDetroit.com network. Thank you for listening.